you and others are behind Fight for 15. Fight for 15 is much bigger. 15 now has been very successful, like some aspects of Fight for 15, and was able to, with, 15 now was able to get a $50 minimum wage passed in Seattle, like I described earlier. 15 now was also able to get a $50 minimum wage passed recently in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And you might not have heard about that. But yes, the first big city in the Midwest, not just the liberal coasts or whatever that propaganda is about, that passed a $15 minimum wage. And this is very, very exciting and will help thousands of people. In fact, a couple facts about that. Let's see. The new wage will be for 71,000 workers across the city. There's a problem already opening up, unfortunately, that the mayor's budget would only create one full-time position to enforce the new wage law. So we're going to have to work on that. But this is a huge step forward for working people in Minneapolis. It goes in increments, but I believe it's already started to go in. And the big thing about the $15 minimum wage law in Minneapolis is that the big business in general, but especially a subsection of it, the big restaurant owners, the big food companies, the big food monopolies, they tried really hard to get tipped workers exempt from it. And they did this campaign, again, here you are in American politics, Alice in Wonderland time, where you had some workers convinced that it was in their interest somehow to fight against 15. They would get trotted out into the corporate media to spew their ignorance and not realizing that studies have proven over and over again that a higher minimum wage far outstrips the precarious nature of tipped workers, you know, unless maybe you're a tipped worker in the fanciest restaurant in town. And even then, you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. You know, you could get fired. You could meet a disgruntled rich person with some heartburn. And there goes your regular tips. But for most people living off tips, they're going to make much more, much, much, much more by having a higher minimum wage, especially one as high as $15 an hour. Because we're talking about federally, you understand, the tipped, this is going to be a surprise to some people because of how evil it is, the tipped minimum wage is only like $2.50 or something like that. It's extremely low because figuring out tips will make up the difference. Well, guess what? They don't make up the difference. And if they do, what difference are you talking about? You're talking about like maybe $7 an hour I'm going to get instead of $2.50? What about Mondays? You know, I mean, anyway, so $15 minimum wage passed. It was polling at like 65%. It was very, very popular, but the Democratic Party would not get behind it. There was one or two Democrats that came out in Minneapolis. The whole city council is Democrat. There was one or two Democrats that started late in the game, late last year, to say they supported it. That was it out of about a dozen or so. And not only that, the Democrats conspired to, with Republican judges, to get the referendum, get a referendum, because it had to go to a referendum because it wasn't being supported legislatively by the Democrats who controlled City Hall. So 15 Now built up, and others working with 15 Now built up this huge movement, labor movement, and so on for 15 in Minneapolis. It was polling 65%. But 2016, it was clear that the Democrats weren't supporting it. It was clear before that too, but whatever. It got strong enough for a referendum on the ballot back when the elections were happening. And at the last minute, the referendum got quashed, killed, removed, because the Democratic Party conspired with the Republicans to do that. But the situation changed very quickly after that, because instead of giving up, 15 Now, Socialist Alternative, many, many others in the labor movement, so on, doubled down, kept working, kept organizing, and we're going to just come up with another referendum if we had to, you know? And the polling data was still amazing, like 60-something percent for 15, despite the setback. So the Democrats got wind of it. The elections are coming up this year. They were basically like, okay, we will, in Minneapolis, elections coming up this year, we will reconsider. And some of them did. Not all of them, but most of them. And it passed. $15 minimum wage passed in Minneapolis. Now they're trying to take credit for it. Oh, yeah, we were always for 15. We love 15, blah, blah. No, no, you weren't. You weren't. You weren't for it. You didn't do anything for it. It was 15 now. It was Socialist Alternative. It was unions. It was community groups, et cetera. Give me a break. But that's what happens. There's no gratitude in politics, as they say. Although maybe someday there will be socialist society. So this article by Andy Moxley about Ginger Jensen and her fight for her campaign for city council does go into that in detail. I don't have time to read a lot of it, but it goes into the how Democrats had not gotten behind this. There's another article in the paper that talks about this, but I just want to get into the not so much the details of the please read the article for that, but just backing up to the general point of why socialists run for office, that sort of thing. Andy sums it up pretty well at the end of the article, a real voice for working people. Quote, Ginger has already stood up to these interests and not faltered. These are corporate interests that are described and political interests through the Democratic Party described earlier in the article. As leader of the 15 Now campaign, Ginger helped build an independent grassroots movement of workers, unions, and community groups to make Minneapolis the first Midwestern city to win a $15 minimum wage. Just happened in the last 6 months. She did this in spite of opposition of big business and the city establishment. Ginger is a true fighter for the interests of working people, and many of the most progressive labor and political groups have endorsed her, including the Communication Workers of America. That's a union. The Minnesota State Council of that union, Minnesota Nurses Association, Our Revolution in Twin Cities, and the Democratic Socialists of America. I heard also that Cornell West has endorsed the campaign, and Medea Benjamin has also endorsed the campaign. These are two well-known, especially Cornell West, well-known left-wing. Now, Cornell West is very interesting. I think we talked about him on the show last time. I've followed off and on things he's written and said. I met him a couple times, and, you know, he's always... pretty good left winger, and very interesting, obviously, to talk to, very brilliant guy. But he always had that one foot in DSA, which for me is like, not one foot, he was a leader in DSA, Democratic Social America, and that meant support for Democratic Party candidates and the idea of reforming the Democratic Party. And that doesn't work, in my opinion, and that just doesn't, and in Social Alternative, we don't support the Democratic Party. So I always had that kind of qualifier. Yeah, Cornell West, great, but... And he seems to ever since the Sanders campaign, seems to be moving away from that position. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he still supports Democratic Party candidates here and there. But he's talking more and more about leaving the Democratic Party entirely, starting a new People's Party. And Social Alternative just worked with him on a conference about that in Washington, D.C., calling on Sanders to get involved in helping to build a new People's Party. And West has gone on Democracy Now! And other forums talking about that at a time when, because Trump is so horrible, obviously, and the Republicans are so horrible, the Democrats are laying low, hoping no one will notice the things they've done, the things they're doing now, sometimes, like, you know, cozying up to Trump on some aspects of health care and other things, and what they're doing locally in a lot of places, and hoping that, 2018, there'll be a massive just anti-Trump thing going on, and people just vote Democrat because that's the game, folks, the duopoly, the lesser evilism, you know? Well, millions of people have gotten over that and are trying to do whatever we can to build a progressive left mass party in this country, to the left of the Democratic Party. And Cornell West seems to have, like, always been, I think, part of that fight in a way, but now really throwing his weight into it fully. But I'm not an expert on what he's doing lately, but that seems to be the case. That's really good. And just to finish off a little bit from this article again, electing a second independent socialist, that would be in addition to Kshama Sawant, who is in office till at least 2019, electing a second independent socialist to a city council in a major city after Kshama Sawant's successful election and re-election campaign in Seattle would not only be a victory for working people in Minneapolis, but would be an important beacon across the country for working class politics. It would show that what Socialist Alternative has done in Seattle since 2013 is not an isolated incident, but the music of the future. Electing Ginger can embolden workers and young people across the country to join us in the project of continuing the political revolution and building a new party of the 99%. The music of the future, there you have it. And before we move to some music, I'm going to also look at this article here, which I encourage you to check out also. More on Ginger. It's under Socialist Alternative in Action, and it gets into some more things that are happening right now through the campaign. Big developers being all over Ward 3, where Ginger Jensen is running in Minneapolis. And if you want to get more information, by the way, because I really don't have time to get too much more into this, go to gingerjensen.org, gingerjensen.org on Facebook. I think it's Vote Ginger. I wish that was here, actually, in this article. I think it's Vote Ginger. And right under this article is a very good article about Seattle affordable housing movement gathers momentum. So it shows what Shama Sawan, Social Alternative, is helping with as being in office, showing what could happen with Ginger in office. So we're fighting for rent control in Minneapolis through the Ginger Jensen campaign. Housing has become a big theme. Now, it's not as emergency sort of situation like in Seattle, but it is a very, very important thing. There are people being evicted, and there are people where the rents are going up. There's gentrification and so on. For example, new high-end units, affordable only a few, going up in Ward 3. A recent study found that there is not one neighborhood in the city affordable to a median-income black family. That's in Minneapolis. Minneapolis needs rent control. This is an article by Kelly Bellin. I'm getting bits and pieces of it here. Our campaign is also fighting for stronger protections for renters and full enforcement of existing tenant rights. Tenants should have 6 months advance notice of a major rent increase. 6 months advance notice of a major rent increase. That would have helped me. Oh, my God. That would have helped me so much when I was younger and having to move all the time because I'd get priced out of places. Oh, 6 months. Oh, my goodness. That's just such a good demand. Security deposits and move-in fees should be capped at no more than 1 month's rent. There you go. Notorious slumlords like Steve and Friends exploit the lack of affordable housing and renter protections, raking massive profits with substandard housing by banking on the fact that tenants can't find an alternative. Now, think about this for a second. You know, we're naming these slumlords. We're naming them. We're going after the most powerful people, the most powerful capitalists in a given location. And they're coming back at us. You know, they're coming back at us. And I'll go into that more in future shows. They're going after Shama big time. They're going after Socialist Alternative. They're going after... they're putting big money against Ginger and Socialist Alternative. Here we go. A quote from a sidebar by Eva Metz, who's very active in the campaign. She said, meanwhile, big money is flooding into Minneapolis' elections. Two of Ginger's Democratic Party opponents, Steve Fletcher and Tim Bilzo, both have said point blank they will accept money from big developers. These are the same developers who exploit Minneapolis' unaffordable housing crisis, building luxury condos and apartments priced out of reach for working people. Millionaire developers like Steve Minn, M-I-N-N, have even set up their own independent PAC to influence the elections in their favor. City establishment kingmakers Sam and Sylvia Kaplan, who have donated over $400,000 to pro-corporate Democratic Party campaigns, are fiercely opposing Bernie-crats, were among the hosts of a recent... lucrative fundraiser for Steve Fletcher. This is how they're going after us. You can see that's pretty obvious. It has become increasingly clear that the Democratic Party establishment is hell-bent on trying to defeat insurgent left campaigns, particularly the socialist candidate who led the way on the $15 minimum wage, Ginger Jensen. Time and time again, big politicians make progressive promises, but at the end of the day, they cannot serve two bosses, big business and working people. We need independent candidates who refuse corporate donations as part of the project of building a new political party that's not for sale. We need a fighter for working people in Minneapolis. In Minneapolis City Hall. Don't let big money buy this campaign. So one of the big slogans of this campaign is Ginger Jensen is not for sale. That's become very popular when we go door to door out there in Minneapolis. People really respond to that. And there is the big, you know, Democratic Party elites, Al Franken out there. Keith Ellison has already endorsed Fletcher, the guy that will take money from developers and is taking money from developers. They're going to come on strong using their money, using their corporate media access. Using their names, their false progressiveness, in the case of Frank and so on, that's going to come on strong towards the end of the campaign. We'll see if a grassroots movement that we've got going, volunteers going door to door. See, the irony about these campaigns is, right, that you got the big money candidates, Democratic Party in this case in Minneapolis, and with all that money, they still can't motivate as many people as we can. That's one of the reasons we run, because you can win, right? It's very hard. It's very, very difficult. You never match their money. If you're able to get close, that's great. And we did get close in Seattle. We raised money. I think the average donation was $14 or something like that. I mean, it was really low. I don't remember. I'd have to double check that. But the average donation was very low for us. But we got enough little donations that we raised like $141,000 or something like that in one of the Shama campaigns. And we're able to use that money much more effectively because of all our volunteers and so on going door to door. And basically, for example, the Ginger Justice Committee has raised over $100,000, but with a median donation of just $20. And, you know, Sanders did that in his election in his run for the Democratic Party thing. He said, and this is not his normal operating procedure, you have to understand, but he cleverly did this thing where he said, all right, I'm not going to take corporate money. And people liked that, you know, and they sent in these small donations. For Sanders, I think it was an average of $27 per, it worked out to. And he was able to do a campaign based on that. So we found out in Seattle, we can do campaigns and win. We're not going to beat the big business money, the corporate money, but we're going to come close if we do our job right, if we really get out there, get the word out. And working people are capable of tremendous sacrifice. That's our advantage, you know? And so we have a lot of volunteers on the ground. They don't, despite all the money. They can at the last minute, though, blitz the media and do the high-end stuff, and that does hurt. I mean, there was a social alternative candidate named Ty Moore that ran in Minneapolis in a different ward back in 2013, and Ty almost won. He was within 200 votes of winning, and we thought he was going to win because it had been such a great campaign. There had been so much support. The last minute, though, oh, yeah, Al Franken, all the big Democrats came in like, an invading army from outside and just threw the money behind a candidate that had not supported at that time, not supported a lot of progressive stuff, and just were able to confuse enough people that we lost that vote. And it's still a great campaign. And with Ginger Jensen's campaign, there's a very good chance of Socialist Alternative winning, of Ginger winning. No guarantee whatsoever. It's an uphill battle. Uphill because of the usual things in American politics, money rules. But running for office in a serious campaign, socialists can use the campaign itself. We're raising issues like, for example, Ginger will go to even a right-wing forum like the Chamber of Commerce will have a candidate's night, right? This has already happened. Ginger shows up, boom, rent control, boom, 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 housing. And that becomes the issue, right? All the other candidates then are asked, oh, what do you think about this rent control idea? You know what I mean? And that changes things drastically. So you have, now in some ways, you know, that allows false progressives to say, oh yeah, I agree with that. If they see something that we put forward resonating, or something that another left winger puts forward that's genuine, that's resonating, then other candidates will steal that, you know? But they won't be able to steal sort of the comprehensive nature of our program. It's not just that one issue, progressive issue. It's a whole range of them. They won't be able to steal some of the analysis and arguments because they don't agree with it. They're not going to go after the system as a whole, and they won't be able to infuse and inspire a broad, as we were called in Seattle, army of red shirts or something like that. I forget the exact title. People that are willing to campaign. Volunteer, by the way. Not everyone. There are some paid staffers, but I mean most people volunteering to go door to door and fight for a socialist candidate in here in the richest country in the world, run by the most greedy people in the world in some ways. Although that's a subjective thing. But there is something else happening in Minneapolis I want to get into. That is, you know, more low-key in the general sense. Like, for example, you're not going to read about this. If Ginger Jensen wins, the city council race, Ginger Jensen so sure wins the city council race in Minneapolis, there's a good chance it will make some media because it will be the second socialist elected nationwide, blah, blah, blah. Might not. It might not. They might bury it, but there's a good chance they'll make some media. Now, this probably won't, but I in some ways, and in a lot of ways, actually, it's also extremely important. There's a member of Socialist Alternative named Ryan Timlin, who has just become president of a large union local out in Minneapolis. It's an ATU local, American Transit Workers Union local. It's basically the bus drivers in Minneapolis and maybe also St. Paul. I have to double check on that. But it's a large number of workers. So, article here, it's an interview from like sort of the editorial board of the paper with Ryan. I'm just going to read a couple excerpts real quick. Ryan Timlin, a member of Social Alternative and longtime labor activist, is running for president. Now, this was written before he actually got the presidency. He ran unopposed at the last minute. We were hoping there'd be an opposition because that could lead to a campaign, which would lead to more, hopefully more discussion of the issues. At this point in time, what happened was that there was no, counter campaign. There was no opposition, which is interesting in and of itself. Shows that there's a lot of respect and maybe a little fear, I don't know, for Ryan as an activist and what he can pull together and what Socialist Alternative can pull together in his support. Within the local, there's another member of Socialist Alternative running for executive board that will go to an election, which is good. But it's also very, very good that Ryan is president of the local. And this is Amalgamated Transit Workers, ATU Local 10-1005. ATU, Amalgamated Transit Workers, is a national union that represents like a lot of city bus drivers, for example, and others. So what made you decide to run? This is a form of an interview. I won't read the questions. It was just, he said he's running because we need a fighting union that can win victories for our members and our communities. For the past 3 years, I've proven my dedication and willingness to defend our members as a union representative for Nicolette Garage drivers and dispatchers. I'm now ready to bring that same level of commitment to the entire membership. Now, I'm trying to get through the article here to see what the numbers are here for the local. And I don't have that information readily available. I think I knew that at one point, but I don't have that. So anyway, and this is interesting, and this will resonate from the thing we were just talking about. As president of the local, I'll only accept the average wage of workers in the local and donate the rest to social justice movements. The union has a fighting history, and we need to bring it back. When we go into battle, whether over contract or other issues, we will be building maximum rank and file participation and democracy and fighting to win. And he talks about the job. It's a hard job. Increase in physical assaults, lack of breaks, a lot of pressure from the city to, they're losing a lot of healthcare benefits, a lot of problems, which is one another reason there's probably a turnover in leadership happening. We need to stop these relentless attacks. There's a contract struggle coming up they're going to be involved in. And it wants to help build a movement, social unionism, get back to the roots of the labor movement. Trade unions have a key role, quote, trade unions have a, this is Ryan Timlin, trade unions have a key role to play in this struggle, but must unite with other unions and social movements to achieve real gains. I've been active in the Victorious 15 Now struggle, protests against police brutality in Minneapolis, Bernie Sanders' political revolution, union solidarity campaigns, etc. ATU 1005 has the potential to be seen as a real fighting force for all working people in the Twin Cities area. Our leadership must seek ways to build more relationships with progressive social movements that challenge the status quo, rather than simply donate to countless run-of-the-mill political candidates. Oh, yeah, I agree with that. With the Super Bowl coming to Minneapolis, we have leverage to fight for a good contract. The company will try to delay and avoid the threat of a strike around the Super Bowl. We should build escalating actions to mobilize members to put pressure on the Met Council to negotiate, et cetera. So he goes into the current contract struggle, or the upcoming contract struggle they're going to have. Another article in the paper, interesting, shows a union victory in Seattle and Social Alternative members on the picket line, by the way. So, that brings up the general point of the labor movement, which, you have to say overall, unfortunately, right now, is on retreat. But it's down but not out. And every once in a while, you read of victories happening. For example, on the show, we've talked about victories in the struggle to organize adjunct professors and grad students around the country. There have been victories there. There have been not getting unions in, but also getting the first contract, which is also very hard. There have been a couple of victories that way. There is a chance of there's the victory of the dining hall workers in at Harvard, and coming up this week, October 10th, 2 days from now, there may be a strike starting of dining hall workers at Northeastern University in Boston, and there will be members of Social Alternative have been supportive of that union local there, and it's the same union that won the strike at Harvard last year. So, what am I saying? Last year, when was that strike? I think it was more. Might have been technically last year. Have to double check that. So, you know, there's more. There's a lot of bad news in the labor movement. Can't gloss over that. But there's a lot of good news too. Most of the focus, though, of course, of progressive victories and fights have been to a certain extent, it makes sense, in the anti-Trump movement, which unions could be playing a bigger role at. I mean, if you look at politics in a very general sense in the United States right now, the problem is that the people that can mobilize a mass movement to Trump are not doing it, unfortunately. Even the groups that you think would have this sort of natural antipathy, wanting to go against Trump and the Republicans and so on, they're not trying the mass organizing strategy that they should be. They're not putting it on the line like they have to. And that would unfortunately include leaders of the labor movement. Nothing new there. They're tied to the Democratic Party, so they're not into building mass movements. But Sanders, who is keeping active in the eyes of the corporate media, putting forward Medicare for All and so on, he's not building a mass movement for that. We have also the Sanders periphery of Sanders, Our Revolution, Millennials for Revolution, I think it's called now, or something like that. It was Millennials for Sanders or something. And other groups that really are not like, I mean, Millennials for Revolution is doing some stuff. I shouldn't say that. But I mean, just like, you know, the Democratic Party, obviously, whether it's the, someone like Pelosi or someone like Sanders or whatever, or somebody that's a hybrid of the two, they're not building this mass movement, and they have the ability to do so. Like, for example, we talked about when the Women's March happened earlier, after Trump got elected earlier in the year. That was a brilliant march. But inside, when you look deep into it, there were two problems. There was a lot of influence in the Democratic Party, but not so much in organizing it, but more like speaking at the marches, various marches around the country, owning it, but not really being responsible for a lot of the organizing for it. There's a lot of people that when they heard about it, they said, yeah, they're going to go. And it wasn't because someone in the Democratic Party told them about it. Now that's inevitable to a certain extent. The Democratic Party is a corporate party. It's pro-capitalist, pro-business. As Nancy Pelosi said, we're capitalists, you know. And yes, I know, but a lot of people don't know. And if the Democratic Party really was interested in a fundamental, war against Trump, then they would be organizing, mass protest. And instead, they're relying on things that they, have ownership in as part of the ruling elite. The Russian stuff through the courts, through the government. And that's about it, really, hunkering down for 2018, like we mentioned earlier. But that's not going to work for people, right? So there is a movement. There's still an anti-Trump movement out there that reemerges from time to time. Black Lives Matter struggles reemerge from time to time. And we're going to get into that. First, we're going to take a quick break here to get some stuff done. And we're going to reintroduce you to a song that was almost a theme song of this show years ago. And that would be The Clash, The Clash's song Magnificent Seven. Enjoy. We'll be right back.
again. Cold water in the face brings you back to this awful place. Knuckle merchants and your bankers too. Let's get up and learn those rules. Weatherman and the crazy chief, one says sun and one says sea. AM, the FM, the PM too, turning out that boogaloo. Get you up and I guess you out, but how long can you keep it up? Give me Honda, give me Sonic, so cheap and real phony. Hong Kong dollar, Indian cents, English pounds and Eskimo pence. Seen the ads, you think it's nice. Better work hard, I seen the price. Never mind that, it's time for the bus. We got to work, and you're one of us. Folks go slow in a place of work. Minutes drag and the hours jump. Yeah, wait, bye-bye. Wait, bye-bye to the boss. It's our profit, it's his loss. But anyway, the lunch bell ring. Take 1 hour, do y'all. What do we have for entertainment? Cops kicking gypsies on the pavement. Now the news has leapt to attention. Lunar landing of the dentist convention. Italian mobster shoots a lobster. Seafood restaurant gets out of hand. Car in the fridge, a fridge in the car. My cowboy's doing TV land. Some more. The sun will sink and we'll get out the door. It's no good for man to work in cages. Hit the town, he drinks his wages. You're threatened, you're sweating. But did you notice you ain't getting? You're threatened, you're sweating. But did you notice not getting anywhere? Don't you ever stop long enough to start? Take your car out of that gear. Don't you ever stop long enough to start? Get your car out of that gear. Call the mobs, a fire and angels came to the jacket at the 7-Eleven. Mobs was good, but he had sense. Engels, Lenin, the necessary bends. What do we got? Yeah. What do we got? Yeah. What do we got? Magnificent. What do we got? Luther King and Mahatma Gandhi went to the park to check on the game, but they was murdered by the other team. Went on to win 50-0. You can be true, you can be false. You'll be given the same reward. Socrates, a Milhouse Nixon, both went the same way through the kitchen. Plato the Greek or in Thin Thin. Who's more famous to the billion millions? Who's Flash? Vacuum cleaner sucks up budgie.
That was The Clash with Magnificent Seven, And that's a song from Rockers Galore by The Clash. And I was joking with someone that's doing a podcast, another socialist podcast, from a member of Socialist Alternative out in the Worcester area, and from Worcester State University. And I was talking about maybe you should come out as a guest on this show sometime, you know, bring some people, whatever. And we could spend the whole show talking about that song, The Magnificent Seven by The Clash. If you listen closely, it's got references to Marx and Engels and so on. And it's talking about basically the labor theory of value in a clever way. And it's a good song. Good song. Hope you enjoyed it. You're listening to Socialist Alternative Radio, talk and music from a working class, democratic socialist perspective. We're here every other Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on WMFO 91.5 FM, Tufts free form, commercial free, community based music, talk, etc. Also known as Tufts Educational Radio. And you can listen by going to WMFO.org. And we're on the last legs of our show here, last leg of our show, and we have to do a public service announcement. And I usually find really good ones. And I'm looking through this big notebook of PSAs we have, and it's also online, but this one's okay. You know, I guess with the hurricanes and stuff, it's okay. Emergency preparedness, public service announcement. Unexpected situations such as a power outage, water disruption, or other emergencies can occur at any time. So be prepared by having a couple of gallons of drinking water and a supply of food stored in your home. It's also an excellent idea to keep a few flashlights and other non-flammable light sources handy. Candles and other open flames can be dangerous, very dangerous, and the worst possible time to cause a fire is when there's some other emergency going on. So flashlights, non-flammable light sources. This is a public message from ready.gov and WMFO in Medford, Tufts Community Radio. I like that one. You know, I'm one of those, like, I'm not a survivalist, but like if I had the money, I would be, maybe. I don't know. And that's my point about this. So if you have the money to store up on flashlights and food and water and circulate that stuff around, you know, buy new stuff every few weeks and all that, that might work. Otherwise, like a lot of advice, they don't talk about how much it costs. And a lot of people can't afford the good advice. So it's all that capitalist stuff that, you know, make the right choices. It's all about choices, right? Yeah. Your choices are very, very limited by how much money you have. Let's find another PSA. I hope this one is still valid. In terms of time, the Tufts University Art Gallery is dedicated to conceiving and presenting exhibits and educational programs that explore new global perspectives on art and art discourse. All exhibitions and related programming are free, open to the public, and fully accessible. The Tufts University Art Gallery is located in the Edichman Arts Center at 40 Talbot Avenue on the Somerville Medford campus of Tufts University. For current exhibitions and hours, just search the web for Tufts University Art Gallery, or you can also call 617-627-3518. This has been a public service message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio. So maybe next show I'll go back to those more exciting PSAs, but those are some solid ones, I think. And I have been to the Tufts University Art Gallery, and it's worth, I forgot what I saw there, but it's worth it, worth going. By the way, free day at the MFA tomorrow, Museum of Fine Arts in Boston, free day. I live for those free days. There's no way in heck I'm going to pay for an art exhibit. I just don't believe in that. Hold on. Just don't believe in it. Should be free to all, like MoMA used to be. Or maybe it still is in New York. I don't know. And I don't pay for it. So MFA has a few free days per year. One of them is tomorrow. And I will be there. Now, yeah, there are lines and it gets crowded because, you know, the masses aren't supposed to really enjoy art that much. The MFA is also free on Wednesday evenings. But I don't know about you, but what 4:45 p.m. on a Wednesday? I mean, you know, rush hour, et cetera. And you get there and you're supposed to stay up all night. And if you have a family or state, you know, it's open till 9 or something. With a family, that just doesn't work out. You know, if you live nearby or something, that could be cool. And it'll be good to know about that. But it's kind of difficult. So it's better to, it would be better if just it was just free all the time. And I used to work there. I used to have a job there years ago as a security guard in at the MFA. You know, when there was a recession, it's the only job I could find, and it sucked. And but what I found out was that the place is awash in money, and this was a long time ago. It's even wealthier now, richer now. They could be free. It could be free. No problem. They'd still make a ton of money. And by the way, it's privately owned. If you think the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston is some sort of public run thing, no. It's a corporation. Anyway, back to healthcare that I mentioned. You know, Sanders has put forward Medicare for All, and that's a step forward. You know, it publicizes that and so on. But a lot of people are saying, well, yeah, he's only putting it forward now because it's a Republican Congress. There's no way of really getting it. So it's just grandstanding. I kind of agree with that, but I also think it's good to put forward. It's good. Anything that keeps that momentum going around single payer, Medicare for All, socialized medicine, they're not all the same, but they're close. This is a good thing. But the problem is, like I mentioned earlier, he's not organizing a mass movement around it. You know, he'll make a speech and whatever. And that's, you know, if Sanders was really a socialist, he would use that platform always to build mass movements and not be content with running things through the legislative grist mill, the capitalist legislative grist mill. And he has said things to that effect in theory. He said, you know, it's up to when he was running for office, he's like, if I get elected, it's up to you, the people, to make things happen. But yeah, it's more of a dialectic. It's the people, if they are serious, real socialists, they help initiate things and help things along by using the political platform that has been won, that they've been voted into, like Shama Sawat in Seattle, for example. So there's a good article called Sanders Launches Medicare for All Bill in the current new issue of Socialist Alternatives newspaper, and I just wanted to look at a couple things in it that are interesting. A good analysis of the Democrats that basically, yeah, 16 co-sponsors, but there's also another bill out there before that, that didn't get support. This one is 16 is not a lot. I mean, the support is larger than it had been for a previous bill is the point, but still there's a long way to go. And but it reflects the fact there's more support for this incarnation of a Medicare for All bill. It reflects there's more pressure from the bottom. Like, one of the things that Obamacare or the ACA did was it was very flawed, deeply, deeply flawed. Now, flaw is the wrong word. It was inherently a wrong thing to do because it cemented the relationship, at least for a time until we can change it, the insurance companies as being absolutely at the center of everything. So everything in ACA depends on, can an insurance company still turn a profit? And everything is geared towards that. So there's a lot of corporate welfare handouts to the insurance companies. And the insurance companies still aren't biting in some areas and withdrawing. Premiums are going up. Nothing in ACA to stop corporations from just raising healthcare premiums on their workers. Happening to me, happening to a lot of other people I know. It's a huge, huge problem. So the basic fundamental problems of profit-mongering healthcare were not solved by ACA, or even they were even made worse in some ways. But there was a few things that were made better. One is that if you do manage to get some insurance and can afford the high premiums, they can't knock you out of the game, so to speak. I don't know why I use that stupid metaphor of a game, but anyway, they can't reject you from having insurance coverage based on pre-existing condition. Positive. You can stay on your parents' health care till you're 26. Positive. That assumes that they have insurance, but whatever, that's a positive thing. You couldn't do that before. And now with the huge student debts and all the pressures on millennials in terms of lower wages and lower life, what am I trying to say? They're not making as much money, they have fewer benefits and so on, more precarious employment. Millennials can't afford, obviously, health insurance in many cases. I hate the word millennials, but I'm using it, whatever. And then you have the third thing was that certain people, you know, through paying the higher premiums qualifying from a certain low income level, I mean very low income, like most government things, when they pitch it low, it goes way low, but it still helps some people, which is great. So there's some people that got health care for the first time, and there's still millions that aren't getting health care even with ACA in place, which even, you know, the Obama administration admitted, but then didn't say they could have changed that, but whatever. So more to the point, right now, recently, over the last year, when Trumpo is trying to get through, and the Republicans trying to get through destroying ACA, in a straightforward way. I mean, they're chipping away at it, and it's got weaknesses, obviously, like I just alluded to. They are, at the same time, there's people that were putting major pressure, people you wouldn't expect, on Republicans primarily, that, why are you doing this to me? I got health care for the first time. These are people that probably hate the word socialism and don't want single payer and all this other stuff. They're just confused as heck, except about one thing. Some of them, I'm talking about, not everybody, they got some health care for the first time that they could actually afford. And I can tell you from experience, if you can't afford health care, you just don't engage. You know, you just say, oh, I can't afford that. I'm not going to do it. So you just roll the dice and hope you're going to survive. And so fewer people have to roll the dice. And some of those that got health care for the first time showed up and were extremely angry, to the point where not just those people, but the pressure from various movements you might see or don't see in locally, regionally, and so on. Even the Republicans, feeling the heat, refused to go through with their destroying ACA. And so that was a really excellent opportunity, actually, to launch a mass movement for Medicare for All, for single payer, whatever title you want to put on. I think Medicare for All is fairly good. I think there's better titles. Single payer, I think, is confusing. Anyway, that didn't quite happen. It was, you know, there was the announcement, but there wasn't the attempt to, you know, organize a mass movement from that announcement. And that's what I was just talking about. So where are we at right now? We have even some of those people that signed on saying things like Al Franken, for example, in Minnesota, saying their support for Medicare for All is only, quote, aspirational, unquote. Others, the goal is just to insert some sort of public option into the current ACA system. The public option means adding a government plan to state insurance exchanges. And this is included in a bill as a step in a four-year transition to a full single-payer system. And Democrats like Kirsten Gillibrand of New York are really saying they want to use the enthusiasm for Medicare for All to achieve reformed Obamacare and leave the insurance companies in place. And also, really badly, and I don't know, this didn't get much press. We certainly talked about it on the show, but statewide initiatives for single-payer. I'm going to quote here from an article by Marty Harrison, who's a nurse, by the way, in Socialist Alternative. Article she wrote, Sanders launches Medicare for All bill. Statewide initiatives for single-payer plans in New York and California marshaled overwhelming voter support this year, only to be blocked by Democratic Party leaders. The Democratic Party neither led the charge to defeat any version of Trump Care, nor the campaigns for single-payer at the state level. So what she's saying here is basically like, if you, unfortunately a lot of people don't know this, but there were key Democratic Party activists, key votes, where the Democratic Party was like, oh yeah, we're all for single payer in these states, and it would have been a great thing, and they just at the last minute totally trashed it. And you had certain Democrats never for it to begin with. You know, the governor in California, for example, Brown, was never for it to begin with. So the Democratic Party trying to put a progressive face on with Trump in power, and yet the devil is in the details, as they say. Sanders seems to be doing something different, but again, where's the mass movement? Where's the real pressure? Now activists for single payer are, you know, taking Medicare for All, you know, as a new slogan or slightly new, and running with it. And, you know, this article talks about, well, what would it take to win this? Well, it would take Bernie Sanders and the National Labor Movement to launch a campaign, including meetings in unionized workplaces, rallies in every major city and town. The nurses' unions and locals of other unions like ATU, CWA, SEIU, and the Teamsters, they could bring resources, leadership, commitment. They already have to single-payer battles in certain places. But where's, you know, more of the labor movement, even more than them, in the same way that Sanders' campaign helped popularize single payer You know, there was an aspect of Sanders' campaign of those big, you know, campaign meetings, you know, in different areas around the country. You could multiply that, make them bigger around this issue. Put maximum pressure on the political establishment movement, run credible independent candidates, key word independent, not Democrats, not Republicans, in 2018, committed to universal health care and against particular corporate Democrats. Well, I would say against all Democrats, but this is against particular corporate Democrats that oppose Medicare for all, because even those that are for it are not really pushing for it in a mass way. But yeah, you could run a good campaign around this issue alone in various places. And yeah, if the Democrats want to, you know, glom on at the last minute, more than welcome. It just doesn't happen that way. Usually they torpedo it at the last minute. But they would just could build a more importantly, a new independent movement, an independent movement for also a new political party. So use the electoral campaigns, I'm quoting here again, to reinforce the movement for single payer and to build a new political party, a party funded by the working class and its organizations, not funded by the corporations. And up in Canada, the New Democratic Party formed in 1964, based on unions, based on community groups around the issue of what they, you know, I don't think they didn't call it single payer. What the heck was the name of it? It was basically healthcare for all. And now that didn't mean they got voted into power all over Canada in 1964. That didn't happen, curiously enough. But they won some seats. They got the issue out there. And all of a sudden, the other political parties were under huge pressure to support healthcare for all up in Canada, to have a national healthcare system. And that was won. And the New Democratic Party went on to, still to this day, hasn't achieved power, total power in Canada, meaning like prime minister, president, etc. It has only won in certain places like Ontario, certain provinces in Canada. But it's kept that issue alive and the system working well enough that it works quite well, actually, but it could work better. The conservatives secretly, and some of the liberals, they secretly defund the system, but there's it's enough of a ingrained in Canadian society right now that they, on the surface, even conservatives will say, especially like sort of average people that consider themselves conservative, they'll say, oh yeah, we love our healthcare system up in Canada. Single-payer, quote, single-payer healthcare will be a vital and monumental step, first step on the path towards universal healthcare in the United States. The fierce opposition of the hospital, pharmaceutical, and medical device corporations to our base demands for health security will expose the need to take these assets into democratic public ownership, to fund a just transition for workers in the industry, free education for all, healthcare professionals, and direct care for everyone. So that was, that's, you know, in case you're wondering, you know, what happened to Sanders' call, if you're following this stuff, for Medicare for all. Well, people are taking it and running with it, but Sanders and the Democrats are not, for the most part, in terms of any kind of mass movement, and that is a big opportunity missed for now. But it's not going to go away. The genie has been unleashed, or whatever the metaphor is I'm looking for, and people are, I don't think, are going to go backwards. The problem is that where, like I said, the problem is at the level of the corporations. There's still a system in place, with even with ACA, that the corporations are where a lot of people get their health care from. And that's shrinking, but it's still out there. And the corporations like Harvard University, for example, where I work, are taking and trying to pay less and less in health care and dumping it more and more on the workers like me that can't afford it. And so that is not being addressed in any of this stuff. I mean, the implication is if we had Medicare for all, that the corporations could dump health care and we could be part of Medicare for all. That's the implication. How that would work out concretely is very, very important. Meanwhile, I'm giving hundreds of dollars, for health care, a month for health care, to this big corporation that should be paying for it entirely as a part of working there. Now, a couple of things I didn't have time to get into today that I wanted to. Watch out for November 16th. This is a 1 year is enough attempt by socialist students, which is initiated by Social Alternative, Millennials for Revolution, and other groups to create a day of action in different cities. Number one, no more racist deportations and racist policing. Number two, Medicare for all, pre-reproductive care, and thirdly, free public college, cancellation of all student debt. General demands, go to oneyearisenough.com for more information. Oneyearisenough.com, all one, you know, push together sentence, oneyearisenough.com. And start an action in your area. Defending DACA is part of this. It's all trying to get these disparate anti-Trump movements together to continue the anti-Trump movement, but around some demands that have come out of this movement so far. So it's November 16th, 1 year is enough. The other issue that's big and we can get into next time more, and it requires a lot more time. I should have started the show with it, and that was my original plan, and then I got distracted a little bit. But the fight in Catalonia for independence, this is an incredibly important fight. And Social Alternative, myself, we are for independence for Catalonia. This is a long-term struggle. The region was incredibly repressed and oppressed by the Franco, the fascist administration in Spain. Long tradition of its own identity, its own language, Catalan, and so on. I spent some time there in the 80s. I'm sure it's changed a lot, but I spent some time in the 80s, and it's an incredible region, amazing people. There's this propaganda against the independence movement, trying to paint it as a rich region that doesn't want to pay its taxes to the rest of Spain. That's not at all what's going on. Catalan has the same inequalities, unfortunately, and the same austerities that the rest of Spain is suffering from under the capitalist regime there and its various governments that support capitalism there. And ironically, and we can explain this more next time, fighting for Catalan independence actually unites the Spanish working class more than letting the Spanish state, the pro-capitalist state government, keep people separate by, for example, in Catalan, a progressive legislature putting forward demands that help working people, like rent control and stuff like that, and then declaring, oh, that's illegal, you can't do that, see you later. So there's a whole huge history and depth of support among socialists, not all socialists, but among a lot of socialists and progressives for Catalonian independence, and that's not getting out in the corporate media here at all. So we support Catalan independence. Go to socialalternative.org, go to socialistworld.net for more information on that. We're out of time. We're going to give it up for the next show. And thanks for listening to Socialist Alternative Radio. Go to Socialist Alternative Radio on Facebook. And Independence for Catalonia. Take care.
Are forever, said the dog on the tombstone. If you're living underneath the bridge, man, all roads lead to home. I got a hidden flask, I'm paid in cash, got a cross above my bed. You know, I hitchhiked from Chicago, and a man walked up and said, this is a union town, all down the line. This is a union town, all down the line. Come to strip our rights away, we'll give you hell every time. This is a union town, all down the line. Today the policeman's a union man, brother firefighter's my friend. And the kids locked in the Capitol are fighting till the end. And we're not gonna break tonight, and we're not gonna bend. Some say the union's down, but I asked around, and everybody said, this is a union town, all down the line. This is a union town, all down the line. And if they come to strip our rights away, we'll give them hell every time. This is a union town, all down the line. That's why, my friend, the blood tastes good every time I'm here. I got a will to win and a Cheshire grin. Yeah, the night watchman is near, and you can't get it where you're at, but you can sure get it here. So come rain or sleet or dark or night, come wind or frigid snow, there's 100,000 in the streets, and that number's gonna grow. And when we put the governor on trial, I'll be in the front row. One, two, three.